morning, I would like to make additional remarks of the issue we studied last Saturday, kind of cognitive subject going to teaching of Samyutta Nikaya Sutra. let me read this teaching. Thus have I heard the exalted one was once staying near Sabati at Jitta Grove in Anathapindika's park. There are these four sustenances present for the maintenance of beings that have come to birth, or for the forwarding of them that seek to become. Which are the four? Material food, coarse or fine. Secondly, contact. Thirdly, volition. Fourthly, consciousness. These four are the sustenances for the maintenance of beings that have come to birth, or for the forwarding of those that seek to become. So, these four, the food in that they become a problem of growth, physically, mentally sustaining life. and also, interesting point, related with this teaching, the conversation between Buddha and Pagna. The question is, who now is it, Lord, who feeds on the consciousness sustenance? The Buddha mentions, not the fit questions, said the exalted one. I am not saying someone feeds on. If I were saying so to that, the question would be a fit one. But I am not saying so. And I'm not saying so if you were to ask me of what now, Lord, is consciousness the sustenance. This was a fit question. Another question, the Panna says, so who now, Lord, exercise contact? Not the fifth question, said the exalted one. I am not saying someone exercises contact. If I were saying so, the question would be a fifth one. But I am not saying so. And I'm not saying so if you are to ask thus. Conditioned now that what, Lord, is contact? These were fit questions. This conversation is very interesting point. I really want to make little additional remarks. because we are always interested in who ate or who exercised contact or who attained enlightenment. Who gave me a proof? If you attain enlightenment, always we are interested in that point. That is really the kind of stopping a stream of life and grasping something conceptually. That is pretty dualistic. Subject in here and object there. But practically speaking, subject and object are constantly going and moving, and like a stream of water. That means you cannot say, I eat. It's not so simple like that. Who eat? I eat. Yes, it is a common understanding, but it's not so simple like that. If you see yourself very closely related with the food or contact or consciousness, I think that you can't say I eat, because if you say I eat, I is pre-conceptual, like of avocado seed. Then the object comes up. You know. But actually, strictly speaking, in reality, you know, subject and object are always moving, interpenetrating. So you have to see the subject and object in terms of the full function. Okay? So what make it possible for you to function instead of grasping the self as a concept or as an idea separate from object? That is the consciousness. Cognition, we say. Consciousness is activity of the mind, activity of the consciousness. Consciousness is not something stay even for a moment. Consciousness is always moving, functioning. When the consciousness starts to operate, immediately consciousness gets its own object. So very naturally, the consciousness, what the consciousness operates means that consciousness already doesn't stay with its own concept, because constant contact with object and create a big scale of the picture, that is function of the consciousness. So that naturally that is called cognition, we say, cognition. So cognition is the activity of consciousness. Okay? Between the subject and the object, and also with all sentient beings. This is consciousness, we say. So if you say, I eat, at that time, it's not so simple, because who eat? You eat the food. That is a very common understanding, but what part of food do I eat? The body? Maybe so. So food, anyway, the food is digested by your stomach and the intestines and becomes the blood and the energies anyway. So you don't eat anyway, your stomach, your intestine eat. But on the other hand, there is a consciousness what you think of food and taste of food. So from this point, you cannot ignore the consciousness. So who eat? You say, I eat. This is common understanding, but it's not so simple. because some of it, that is interesting eats food. But on the other hand, consciousness also eats. So it's pretty difficult. What is the cognitive subject? Subject is. Finally, it's very blurred. So we don't know who is subject. As a concept, it's pretty hard to know. So that's why the Buddha mentions of the who eats, who feeds consciousness. This is not appropriate questions because we are interested in that point always, but if you get the answer from that point, well, very naturally you set up a human life, you know, separately from the former object and subject and very conceptually. So finally your life doesn't work. But self, so-called I eat, self is nothing but the concept. The self is always working every day, contacting with anyways object and all sentient beings, the conditions anyway. So from this point, who is I? Well, I is consciousness anyway. I is always functioning. What's part of the I functioning? There is a consciousness, including physical condition too. So functioning consciousness always functions there. So real function of the I is nothing but the consciousness. So always there is a consciousness. That consciousness is activity of consciousness, so-called cognition, we say. And then in terms of cognition, in terms of activity of consciousness, you should understand who I am and who, what your objects are. So this is a very complicated situation happens. That's why it's pretty hard to understand. Because we understand the life in common sense always. Who eat? I eat. Who attain enlightenment? I attain enlightenment. Who prove that enlightenment? Buddha prove, teacher prove, that's it. Well, I don't know. It's very complicated. So if you always make a question in that way, even though you can get the answer, it's not right answer. That's what Buddha mentioned here. It's not appropriate questions. Because already food here, already I is here. How does I exist? It's not concept, it's already functions, something alive. So something aliveness, alive is constantly connected with something, with conditioned, many conditioned elements. So that is subject or object, or consciousness, we say. So very naturally Buddha mentions that question is not appropriate because you stop stream of water and grasp it. It's just like a stop the streaming of the water and grasp something. And then say, this is I. But it's not real way because it is conceptual, very conceptual. So why don't you see the contents of the I? Why the I exist? Because I is already here. But why don't you know the contents of I's existence right now as you? How it comes up, how it comes to pass, object two.
So that's why Buddha mentions it in this point. Last Saturday I mentioned the example of the fire and the wood. According to Nagarjuna, in common sense, the wood is burning, but actually, wood is not always burning, because fire is burning, strictly speaking. So what is the, what we have to think of, what is the subject of the burning fire? What is burning? Or fire is burning? You cannot say what is burning. Or you cannot say either fire is burning. But strictly speaking, there is a fire there, okay, right now. So fire is pretty conspicuously burning right now. So what we are interested in. So how fire, what is the content of fire burning, burning fires? So burning fire is a concentrate of burning connected with oil. And from moment to moment, it's changing. But on the other hand, there is something continuous, so-called burning, connected with the wood or oil. And then we say this is fire, but it's not real fixed entity of fire, we believe, because from moment to moment, it's changing. So according to conditions, fire maintain in burning, but fire may stop burning according to the conditions. So we believe fire is burning. That is a subject of burning fire? Yes, it is, but no, it is not. Because without oil, fire doesn't come into existence. The same applies to the anger. We say anger. Anger is compared to very often the fire. So we say the burning, burning with anger. Of course, many conditions, circumstances, heredities, and customs, your education, emotions, psychological emotions, intellectual understanding, and many things give rise to anger. But you can say conditions, all conditions, customs, stimulations, circumstances, heredities and your personality are subject of anger, you cannot say. Because they are nothing but the conditions as a helper to make it possible for anger to exist. So they are not real subject. On the other hand, anger itself is subject, of course, because anger is there. But still, anger is, you cannot say anger is subject. If you think anger is subject, immediately you can think anger as a fixed entity. But anger is not a fixed entity. And it is something alive, like a stream of water, connecting with conditions, many conditions, and the past, present, future. So appears sometimes immediately, next moment it disappears. So from moment to moment, the anger doesn't stay in the same way, in the same pattern, according to the condition, it's burning, but it's changing. If you fight with anger, anger is burning constantly, like casting the oil in the fire, so you can make a big fire. But if in terms of the constant change, continuous change of fire, well, I think you have to see the anger with a feeling of lightness or magnanimity at that time. Anger is, you can see the change of anger constantly. And very naturally, anger becomes, well, getting subdued, subside. But if you don't see that aspect of anger, you're always fighting, because you believe anger is real, as solid. No, I don't think. That is very common understanding. That's why you fight. But anger itself is just like a tofu. I mentioned all this.
Just like a tofu.
A jellyfish, you know. If you put it in sunshine, it's melted away. Mm-hmm. If you fight with a tofu, and the tofu doesn't kill, it disappears. This is a characteristic of anger, emotions itself. That's why we have to understand what is a subject. Who make you anger? I or conditions? No, it's not appropriate question. Instead of that question, why don't you know what the content, what is the quality of anger, how it is, how it exists, how it is produced, by what? Well, you can see that. That is better. That is a really fixed question. That's why the Buddha mentions like this. Your question is not appropriate, but why don't you ask? Why don't you make a question? What is contact? How? Why is it contact exists? How does contact exercise? Because self is of a, you know, whatever you say, I. Self is not the kind of the idea of I you believe. Self is nothing but consciousness. Mm-hmm. Consciousness is nothing but activity of the I. Activity of the I is consciousness. What is that? That is cognition. So the I obviously exists right in the middle of stream of cognitions, constantly. You can't stop it. So that's very complicated. You are right in the middle of a pool, so-called cognitions, the understanding and constantly related with object and subject with the many conditioned elements. So finally, whatever you understand intellectually or psychologically or philosophically doesn't hit the Buddha's eyes, so your answer becomes blurred. So very naturally, we have to anyway research deeply content or quality of anger which exists now. That is better for us, instead of who make it, who make you anger, or the conditions is to blame, instead of saying like that. So that's why the subject, real subject of the cognition is nothing but consciousness. Okay? Consciousness. in terms of the function of the self, it is called cognitions. So self is cognitions. But if you see the self as an idea, it is called self or the I. But in terms of function of the I, it is nothing but the consciousness. So that's why in Buddhism, in early Buddhism, the Buddha mentions always subject of the cognition. Subject of the cognition is nothing but the consciousness. So what is the consciousness to you? So in the Digankaya, it says, Samyutta Nikaya, it says, by attachment to body, a breathing, consciousness, if it get a standing, may persist with body for its object, with body for its platform, seeking a means of enjoyment. It may come by growth, increase, abundance. By attachment to body breathing, our consciousness, if it gets a standing, may persist. With body for its object, with body for its platform, seeking means of enjoyment. It may come by growth, increase, abundance. So consciousness is characterized by contact with object and finding the platform to stay, to dwell in. So constantly going. And then that finding, discovering of its object makes it possible for consciousness to enjoy, to clear, and to facilitate its own growth, its own abundance. So that is characteristic. In the Digankaya, also the four kinds of consciousness, four stations of consciousness. It says, breathing, when the consciousness gaining a foothold persists. It is either in connection with the material qualities or with a coefficient feeling or perception. Efficient of feeling or perception. Or volitional complexes. In connection with any of these as an instrument, as an object of thought, as a platform, as a seed of enjoyment, it attains to growth, an increase in abundance. This is the characteristic of consciousness. So, the in connection with any of this as instrument, always consciousness contact with the object, because that means the function of the consciousness. It's not concept of the consciousness which is dead. The consciousness is nothing but the stream of water. That means process, constant process. So from this point, the consciousness already are the anyway, finding the place and using the something as the instrument, using something object of thought as something platform, as a seat of enjoyment. And then those things make the consciousness to attain growth. Without object, without platform to let it stay, without let it enjoy itself, consciousness doesn't work. So how does consciousness attain to growth? So consciousness already characterized by having the object, finding the instrument, and finding the object of thoughts and the platform and seat of enjoyment. And then it attains a growth, increase, and abundance. So very naturally, within the consciousness, there is a kind of attachment there. Consciousness is characterized by nothing but the stream of water constantly going. But on the other hand, within the consciousness, it has a kind of attachment there. So, Sthanipara, Buddha mentions, through comprehending each and every stage, what minds, consciousnesses, accumulations reach, he knows the stage attained by him, you sight, and what release his stage ensures. Through the comprehending each and every stage, which minds accumulations reach. Mind accumulations reach means mind consciousness of working, okay? And that working of the consciousness is very subtle, sometimes very coarse, very rough textures, but very subtle texture there. I mean, the minute vibration of the consciousness is always going under all circumstances. So you cannot say, I don't have a mind. No. So consciousness is always there. You cannot say, I am completely free from consciousness. The moment when you say, I am free of consciousness, means already consciousness. So you never find real true the true meaning of the no consciousness. So in the Buddhism, no consciousness means no self. No self means no consciousness, no activity of consciousness. No consciousness. Okay, no consciousness means to let the consciousness pass, move. Like a stream of water, as simple as you can. That is called no consciousness, no perception of consciousness. Because consciousness always has a personality to stay, to find the seat of enjoyment, of its platform to stay. Very naturally, that's why that is called attachment. By this, by attachment, anyway, consciousness attains the growth, increase, abundance. That's why it's fun for us. It's really fun. But on the other hand, it's pretty difficult to understand the total picture of human world. So that's why, anyway, we have to think about the consciousness, what is the consciousness. So Dogen Denji mentions, anyway, you have to understand the moment of time. What is a moment of time? If moment of time is found in your life, you can get the body mind, the way-seeking mind. But in this case, moment of time is found in your life means vibration, minute vibration of consciousness, whatever you do, in Zazen, so-called in stillness, in tranquility, or in peace, whatever you say, in peace, in harmony, still consciousness is working. It's very minute. But when you realize it, peace, harmony can be dealt with very carefully. You understand what the peace with harmony is. So that's why Stanipara mentions through the comprehending each and every stage that mind accumulations reach. Anyway, mind accumulations always reach. Very minute vibration always there. For instance, if you do Zazen and exactly you become a Samadhi one with Zazen, with the breathing and with the Zazen itself, that time still vibration of the minute vibration of consciousness, the comes to pass. In other words, come up immediately. And then says, I get it, immediately. So that's my, you don't know from where that mind comes up. You don't want the consciousness working like that always. What you want is to become, one with the merging with the Zazen and the breathing exactly, so-called Samadhi. But right in the middle of Samadhi, there is a consciousness always working. So that's why you have to know. You have to know how minute your consciousness is working in Zazen. At that time, you can take care of Zazen really carefully, or you can be attentive to your Zazen, your body, your mind, with compassion. You can really recommend yourself to the compassion of Zazen, compassion of your breath, anyway. But if you don't understand that minute vibration of consciousness, you become very arrogant. So-called, I can do anything by means of my effort. It's very arrogant. But you cannot do it. You cannot take care of even the consciousness. How can you take care of consciousness? How can you take care of a body? So-called I do, or I attain enlightenment. It's not so simple. Who attain enlightenment? Who does Zazen? I do. No, it's not. You do also, you do, of course, you do practice Zazen, but it's not so simple like that. Right in the middle of doing Zazen, functioning of Zazen, you cannot say, I do Zazen. No. What part of you do Zazen? Your body? Yes, your body. No, in a sense. Because you think of Zazen. Now what kind of a thinking, consciousness do Zazen? Intellectual? Of course. But non-intellectual. Emotional? Sometimes emotional is very peaceful? Oh yes. But not peaceful. Even right in the middle of Zazen. You cannot say peaceful emotions do Zazen, no. Sometimes anger, hatred. So it's not so simple. It's not so simple because you have to see the subject and the object in the right in the middle of the functioning constantly. So that's why the Buddha mentions, anyway, you have to comprehend each and every stage which mind accumulation reach. That is the person who knows. Who knows the stage attained by him. then that is so called free from consciousness. You sight and what release this stage ensures. So very naturally you can be attentive to the function of the consciousness and simultaneously connected with Zazen and you. So very naturally consciousness, strictly broadly speaking, consciousness itself is very peaceful. Okay? Very peaceful because consciousness is just like a stream of water. But within the consciousness, it is characterized by a kind of attachment I mentioned here. So that means your conscious function of the consciousness you do, you exercise, is not mature. It's not mature. But consciousness itself originally is very mature. But when the consciousness starts to operate, it is not mature in, it is not immature way. So that's why you have to make consciousness mature to let it operate just like a stream of water, passing as simple as you can. This is our practice. So when you do that, then simple as you can, you have to deal with the consciousness and Zazen the subject and all thinking me. That is a smile. So very naturally we have to arrange the circumstances, you have to have physical postures, you have to concentrate on breathing with the mind. So you can take care of this. Not very naturally you can do Zazen. But right in the middle of Zazen, still consciousness coming up, but Dogen Zenji mentions, throw away, even the good or bad, right or wrong, just sit down. So very naturally, this is the best way to deal with the consciousness as simple as you can, in Zazen. So if you think something special in Zazen in order to reach the enlightenment, etc., it makes your consciousness complicated. So you should deal with the consciousness exactly simple as you can. This is the Shikantala. And then that practice anyway extend into everyday life. In the Dhammapada, there is interesting passage here, 160. Self is the Lord of self. Who else could be the Lord? With self well subdued, a man finds the Lord difficult to find. So in this case, self is most important. You must be a host. You must be a master of yourself in whatever situation you may be. Okay? That is a one point we have to do always. Right in the middle of function of the consciousness, okay, related with the subject and the object in all circumstances, anyway, you must be a master host of yourself in whatever situation you may be. And then you should find the peace, harmony coming up from the self, not from others, not from deities you can believe. But it's very difficult for us to not to have anything to depend on. That's pretty hard. That's why in the Upanishad, they always emphasize the Atman, which exists forever. But Buddhism, we don't say so. That's what, and then Upanishad, all its mentions are delight of Atman. But Buddhism doesn't say delight of Atman. Instead of a delight of Atman, we say a delight of Dharma. Dharma is the principle of existence, ultimate principle of existence. That is not the teaching. That is a teaching, of course, but it is not something apart from you. It's with you. You can find it. So you have to, who tried to find this one? You tried to find this one. So you are very important. So Buddha, but that is the first point. The second point is the self must subdued. Means you have to bring the peace and harmony to your body and mind. That is our practice. So there is a practice which calls the idea of very common self to turn into profound or defined texture of the self. That is what kind of self. 1.8 self is law of the self. Second, we have to subdue, train, define. That's why it says, with self well subdued, a man finds the Lord difficult to find. This is a practice. So we don't have anything to depend on, but there is something to learn, which means ultimate principle of existence. That is a teaching. So why don't you listen to the teaching? And also, you have to have friends. That is a Buddha. Buddha is not deity. Who control you? Buddha is a friend. Means Buddha is good example of the human being who experienced that principle of existence and make it alive in his life. That's why we know him as a good example for us. That's why let's come close to him. And then learn. Practice together. And then you can learn. So that is a Buddha, okay? Buddha. And then you need a teaching, because every day you have to close with you become close to him and practice and live together, walk hand in hand, but on the end we have a consciousness. That's why we have to take care of consciousness. That is a teaching. Listen to the teaching. So how subdue the self? How subdue? How bring the peace and harmony to the self? This is, listen to Buddha's teaching and take refuge in the Triple Treasure, and also let's walk hand in hand with person who show us good example. Okay. So that is this mission. So in early Buddhism, Buddha always mentions how important self is. Always self there. But that is not small self. Of course small self. But that small self must be refined and turning into a new big self. Because self itself is already big self. Because small self, the self, has already great personality and capacities to grow in that way. So if you refine the self through the practice of listening to Buddha's teaching and walking in hand in hand with the Buddha, and very naturally, self is refined. So I don't think by the practice and then you can find the self, big self. I don't think this is appropriate understanding. Okay? Because yourself is already big self. So why don't you show the big self? But you cannot show the big self at random. So there is a certain a way to show big self. In other words, you have to make arrangement of circumstances. If you want to do zazen in proper way, you have to arrangement circumstances, and you have to make arrangement of the body, physical body, mental body, mental situation too. And then that way makes you the big self, zazen, and appears. So you cannot manifest the big self at random. So there is a rule, regulation, very naturally, many things come up. Okay? And then through this, that's manifest. So all we have to do is constantly let's manifest big self. That is a practice. So practice is a big self. Nothing but the manifestation of the practice, a big self. Not by means of the practice. And then you will attain. This is a very common understanding. Okay, do you have questions?
You were talking about accomplishing things by your effort. And when you're talking about your sanskrit, that you were saying that you can't do that. Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
What's the difference between that and being the master of yourself?
But if you believe very strongly that you can achieve a certain stage or a goal in life only by means of your effort, it seems to be good because people think that how brave you are, how smart you are. But that is really egoistic because what you cannot do only by means of your effort. Because before you do something by means of your effort, where you are, where you have been. So that's why Dogen Zenji mentions be on board and row the boat. So you cannot forget. You cannot forget being on board before you row the boat. For instance, you can practice by your effort, yes. This is a so-called self-power in the opposite to the power of others, you know. Others in the Buddhist school mentions. But you cannot take care of human life only by means of the self-power or only by means of others' power. No. Depending on others. because we need two. So you rode the boat. Who rode the boat? You. Okay. But on the other hand, you shouldn't forget. You shouldn't forget recommending yourself to the compassion of the being on board before you think it. Do you understand? This is really compassion. You cannot forget. So you should pay attention to it. And then you become very light, magnanimous. So you have to recommend your body and mind to a compassion of the whole world. You can be on board before you think, or whether you like or dislike, you are already on board. And then you can roll the boat. This is your effort. So Buddhist practice is always there, going there. Okay.
That would mean to be master of self.
Sure. And then you can be master of yourself in whatever situation you may be. Because master is to become what you are and with all sentient beings. Okay. Not to become you separate from others. That is to become master of yourself. If you become master of yourself, separate from others and all sentient beings, then naturally you become you, but it's that small self. So your life is really limited. So lots of suffering, isolations, many things come up. So basically, your consciousness must be lightness, must be in lightness, and in magnanimity. Recommending your body and mind to anyway compassion of the whole universe, being on board before you think it. This is our life. And then you can deal with everyday life. With magnanimity, lightness, then your effort really work. Otherwise, your effort becomes very stiff and irritated and nervous. That is, the more you become nervous, the more you try to make more effort, but it doesn't work. So from this point, our effort is not to manifest your effort, but within the effort, you have to manifest that compassion of the whole universe. Okay?
When you were talking about I, and you were talking about consciousness, I was wondering why we're only talking about consciousness apart from the other skandhas. But I guess I didn't understand in some way, like you were saying when I eat, it's the small intestine or the stomach you eat. But in some way, isn't that part of I, or what we call I also?
It is part of I, total,
right.
Total picture. So still there is something blind, you don't know what the I is. Even though you say you understand pretty well who either is, but still there is a blind, something blind you don't understand, who eat. That is the intellectual understanding, constantly.
In terms of shame, you have to make, you're sitting a long time, and you have to make huge effort. All is happening in meditation.
That is a big effort, not small effort. Big effort. Small effort is obviously try to create your effort. So you should bring the effort into that thing, making the space enough to invite big effort. That means universe. So doesn't sitting doesn't that is your effort, but simultaneously your effort must be magnanimous and light. Enlightenment means that is, you know, means inviting whole universe into your effort. That time doesn't works pretty well. But if you don't invite in your effort is your effort, but it's become irritated still. And then within the experience of the effort, and then sometimes good effort, a good feeling, but a feeling, whatever, anyway, particularly the within the butt feeling, it's you don't want to continue to effort. But if you always invite in a whole universe, that big effort, at that time, well, whatever happens, but eating, good feeling, still you can carry the effort. That is magnanimity.
So, what do you mean by inviting the whole universe?
Well, inviting means you should get ready. Okay, you should get ready to to make a space. Where others all essentially come in. That is invite. You should make a space. If you don't have any space, you know, overthinking yourself at that time, you don't have any space. Flexible space. Okay? At that time, you cannot invite, you cannot get ready to invite anybody. Okay? So, in order to invite anybody with a dinner, well, you have to have a little bit extra space. If you don't have enough food, you cannot invite anybody. So you have to have a little bit extra food, and mentally and materialistically you should have. And then you can invite the people to have a dinner with them. So to invite universe means you must make big space anyway. Big space enough to invite, to accept the whole universe.
Does that mean accepting whatever happens?
Well, only when you get ready, universe comes in. But when you don't get ready, it's pretty hard. So you have to get ready. That is a practice.
But does being ready mean being able to accept whatever happens at this moment?
Yes, that is, you have to deal with something you are concentrated on. You have to deal with something you face, you know, with wholeheartedness. That is be ready. For instance, teaching is always teaching, but if you are ready to understand, if you are ready, if you become mature, then naturally Buddhist teaching comes in, to, even though you don't understand, you don't want.
Okay.
The teaching comes in. That is invite. Do you understand? But when you don't, when you are not mature, you always try to understand. You try to go. You know. You try to understand. If you read the Shobo Genzo, Genzo Koan, if you try to move toward object, that is a delusion, Dogen Zen says. Without that delusion, you cannot reach anything. You cannot understand it. So that is all right, but it's not mature exactly. So you must be ready to accept something comes in naturally to your life. Naturally. Instead of you try to understand. If you mature, when Buddha's teaching comes in, you say, oh yes, you know, teaching is your life. Teaching is your life.